hijab, hijab, hijab.
See,
hijab.
It's made bagels,
right? Oh, yeah. They're
like number one to three.
Yeah, they're, yeah. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
And you were down.
What are they, three and six?
They're 5 and 3.
Wow.
Hey. Now they're 5 and 4.
They're tearing it up.
Barely beating 500, man. That's good.
Yeah. Go Browns.
All right.
Go Browns, man.
Absolutely. Why are you not?
Hey. How do you feel about OBJ?
I don't think he ever fit into our offense. So I'm happy for him. But we never utilized him. He never really excelled with us. Are you a Titans fan?
No, I'm a Rams fan.
He's from St. Louis.
It's a bad St. Louis. Day to be a Rams fan.
And then they moved. So come on, it's eligible.
I'm slightly acceptable. Doesn't feel like a bad thing.
All right, my friends, we're in lesson 6, looking at the night that Jesus was crucified, arrested at least, and betrayed, and Peter's part of that. Very, very moving story. We will have a word of prayer, though, to begin, and Ethan's going to lead us.
Let's pray. Thank you, Lord, for this day that you've given us. Help us to focus on this lesson and pull much from your word, Lord. Please keep us safe on the way home. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Amen. Thank you. All right, so we noted in the last lesson, going back to, you know, this night, and it all started with Jesus having this last Passover meal with his apostles. And a lot of things are happening at this setting, but Jesus knows he's about to die. He's already told them on 3 different occasions how it's going to happen, who's going to do it, but he would come back from the dead. They didn't get it, but anyway, he knew he was about to leave. But he left an example of humility by washing their feet. Another profound lesson. But the thing we're going to see from this for our lesson is the fact that he was showing them the act of service, and it's used as a reference to show Peter his need to be fully committed, you know, and giving up himself. Because, you know, Peter's like, you're not washing my feet. Very humiliating thing to do. And he couldn't see how the Son of God, Son of Man, would be washing his feet. That just didn't sit well with Peter. Jesus says, if I don't wash you, you can't have anything to do with me. You have to let me do this. Peter comprehends that. And so he says in response to that statement, what is he saying?
Then wash all of me.
Right. Yeah. Wash my hands and my head. That if washing is what I have to do to be associated with you, don't stop at the feet. Okay? So when he's saying wash my hands and my head as well, what's he trying to say? That I stink and I need a bath? Is that what he's trying to say? This right here, right? Is he not trying to show Jesus, okay, whatever it takes for me to be totally on board with you, that's what I'm willing to do. So at the moment, he's like, I'm all in, okay? You're everything to me. So that's that setting there that we already looked at. Now, from that, in that same setting, Jesus says that all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. Talking about a prophecy in Zechariah. And they disagree as they're having this meal together. I mean, it's also at the same, you know, setting he talked about one of you is going to betray me, so on and so forth. But Peter disagrees with this about stumbling. And to what degree did he disagree with Jesus? What did he say in response to that?
Even if all our major stuff and get Iowa not.
Exactly. Every other joker in here might do it, but I'm not. You can count on me, all right? These other 11, they may, but not old Peter. I'm all in. I'm all in. I'm never going to leave you. Even if I have to die for you, I'm going to be with you. And Jesus said, well, just so happens, Peter, before we even hear the rooster crow twice, you're going to deny me not just once, but three times. You're going to deny knowing me. And he, of course, disagrees with that, and he claims allegiance, and so does every other apostle in there. And I think all of that is really important, you know, building up to the scene of denial and his wanting to separate himself from Jesus. I mean, because we're just talking about a few hours away from this. I mean, that's a few hours apart from, boom, I'm all yours. Nothing's going to stop me. No way. I might be the last guy standing, but I'm yours. From that segment to, like, Jesus, who, no, blinky blank, starts cussing. I don't know this guy. I have nothing to do with him. That's how dramatic these turn of events are in this scene, okay? But we can see that they're all, at the moment, caught up in the moment, thinking it's not going to happen. Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all said likewise. Mark 14, verse 31. Now, what should that show us about emotions and feelings versus faith? What should that show us? Are they one and the same? Okay, how are they different? Feelings and faith. How are they different? They affect one another, no doubt.
Feelings are very temporary, but faith is more of a mindset that you need to
get through. All right. Feelings are temporary. So the faith is more of a mindset. Okay? Right?
Feelings can lead you in a different direction than your faith can.
Right. You know, you can't trust the feelings. And unfortunately, that's how we're all wired, though, especially in religion, is to rely on the feelings. But you can't let that define you. You know, you can't get caught up in the moment. And what we're about to see with what Jesus is telling this guy this night is there's a way for you to strengthen your faith, and you've got to do it. And then you can't rely on, you know, these emotions or the moment at hand, really. Okay, anything else on this scene? Total commitment. Okay. From this, they go to the garden. And once again, I think it was Kelly's class that pointed out the fact that, you know, they all go to the garden, but Jesus separates Peter, James, and John and takes him with him into the inner parts of this garden. Okay. Why is that, though? Why do you think these guys were selected here? I mean, they, you know, just had some other experiences, but why this? Any thoughts?
Well, besides the fact that they were part of the Transfiguration, Peter and John, and I would assume James, have been kind of with Jesus since the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus probably knows in future events, James is the first apostle to be officially killed.
Right.
So that might just kind of been like a, you know, James is going to be the first, so I'll have him see these events mm-hmm. to reinforce the faith of the others. And then, you know, Peter's going to have a big part to play in setting up the church. And then John will be the last apostle to sort of give the revelation.
Right.
But that is all, you know, speculation. Yeah. It probably came down to... they were with them at the Transfiguration, and they were the ones who knew the longest.
Okay, good. Those are all very credible. I mean, the fact that, yeah, they were there in his inner circle for so long. And like you mentioned, you know, Peter would be the first to do what he did, and James would be the first to die, and John would be the last one standing.
Well, they would all be instrumental in phases of the church.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think they all three would also be very outspoken.
Okay.
So they would probably be, personality-wise, I would think that they would be the ones that will speak more. With Peter, we're seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
He's always the first one to speak up. He's always the first one to talk out. And so I think people might hear from them more
mm-hmm.
than the others. So maybe
mm-hmm.
that's why he had them go through these
mm-hmm.
experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could be. I mean, they would be, you know, they would do more with that knowledge then, probably. I mean, it's interesting. I don't have a clear-cut answer. I'm just kind of curious what you think about it. You know, I did read that perhaps these are more equipped than the others to witness what they're about to witness with Jesus, you know, sweating blood and the struggles that Jesus is about to go through in his prayers. There's something, you know, Jesus was wanting them to see in these personal encounters.
And they also know to spend, they were the closest to Jesus.
Yeah.
To spend the most time with them.
That's
so
true.
He's going to call the three closest to him during this hour of trial.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, it could have been as simple as that, maybe.
It could have been. I mean, for real. Because how close were he and John? I mean, how do we know they were close? What's one big way of knowing?
Well, John refers to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved the most.
Right. You know, reclined in his breast is, you know, during this banquet, this last meal. And what else? What's another big one with John and Jesus? It's about to happen.
He talks to his mother.
Exactly. You know, Jesus is dying on the cross. And he says, "Woman, behold your son," you know, talking to John, speaking of John. So, I mean, yeah, maybe it is as simple as they were part of this inner circle, you know, in terms of intimacy and personality. But he did want witnesses there, and I think especially as we'll see with Peter, because he singles out Peter again. You know, they're falling asleep. And why are they falling asleep? The same reason you're falling asleep right now. Why is that?
It's late at night.
Yeah, it's late. It's much later for them. Yeah, it's late at night. You know, we have to keep in mind this wasn't like an 8-to-5 job. I mean, these guys were hit constantly for years, and they had. And it's not like they had a solid night's sleep going into this. I mean, they were always on the go, and you know, there was nothing normal about any of the stuff they went through. So, yeah, it's understandable that they're falling asleep when Jesus is praying, okay? But he addresses Simon, and why do you think that? Because he comes back and he says, "Are you guys still sleeping?" And he says to Simon, especially, you know, in verse 37, he came and found them sleeping and said to Peter, "Simon, are you sleeping? You do not watch 1 hour, watch and pray." So why is he addressing Peter at this time of these three? They're all sleeping.
Peter's the one that he told, like, "You're going to betray me." So it makes sense he would, like, call him back again.
Good. Very good. Right. Yeah. Jesus has already warned him that he's going to betray him, deny him that night. Not going to happen. Okay. And yet, he's saying, "Can you not watch and pray? Can you not watch 1 hour and pray?" And he says in verse 38, "Watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." That's where that emotion stuff comes in. You know, you got to be careful on that. But Peter's about to experience a life-changing event. Jesus is trying to warn him, like Lauren said, it's going to happen. And he hasn't taken it seriously. Now, what can we learn about prayer from what Jesus said to Simon? How can prayer help us?
It recenters our mind and our emotions.
Okay, right, it does. It recenters our mind.
I'm asking for God. Asking God for help is never not going to help.
Exactly.
Well, you said to pray lest you fall into temptation. Okay. So if he wasn't praying, then of course it would have been much easier.
Right.
So it can act as a buffer kind of resistance.
For real. I mean, you know, you see like on, what's that one? Groundhog Day. You know, he keeps going back to the same day. Don't you know that if Peter could go back to this scene, he would have like, okay, yeah, I need to pray. I need to pray, pray, pray. Because I'm about to get sifted like wheat. I need to pray. Now, if he could go back and he would see what Jesus is seeing before it happens and says, okay, you're right. I need to be praying just as hard as you're praying. You know? So, that says something. I mean, if we keep getting whipped with a certain sin, what do we need to do? We need to pluck out our eye, for one thing. We keep getting whipped by it. But, right? Pray. Keep praying. And keep praying till you have the strength. All right, anything else on that in the garden? I have a coffee pot. Okay? I'm going to make some coffee. Wake everybody up. I don't mind.
I think it's really interesting that, like, Jesus adores Peter and Simon instead of
Peter. Yeah, well, yeah, there you go.
Because, like, earlier, like, Jesus has said, like, look, I'm calling you Peter now. Like, you're going to play this, like, really big role in this kingdom that I'm bringing. Mm-hmm. And then, like, now Peter is kind of just, like, he's not meaning to ditch Jesus, but he's setting himself up to just fail Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Jesus calls him Simon, which is what he was called.
It might also be just to get his attention better.
Yeah. James Michael Thomas?
Yeah.
No.
When in the moment, he was not the rock, was he?
No.
He was not.
Right.
So he's calling him something else.
Very good. Ooh.
And I brought up in the first lesson that Simon means listen or hear. So I think it's interesting what you said. It's like, hey,
right.
You kind of what you think
exactly.
Like, it's like, hey, listen.
I mean, your mom's yelling all three names? Yeah. it's go time. I mean, you better wake up. So, that's very good observation. Very, very good. Okay. All right. So, this is happening, okay? And he rebukes him. But again, they kept falling asleep. They weren't listening to him. And they did not know what to answer him in verse 4. So, they're tired, okay? But, I mean, Jesus is tired. You know, they're all tired. But Jesus is able to work past that because he knows he's about to get tested, you know, more than ever. All right. So, they're in the garden. And then, here comes Judas. Judas shows up because he left the supper. What you go do quickly. And they didn't know what Judas was up to. And that right there shows something right there. I mean, think about it. Jesus said, one of you is going to betray me. And they each started asking him what?
Is it I?
Exactly. Lord, is it I? And Judas was in that group too. So he asked it. Yeah. Lord, is it I? And what did Jesus say? Yeah. Yeah, but no one else caught on to that. Now, think about that for a second. When he rebukes that lady for anointing Jesus' feet with that costly perfume, and he said, why couldn't this be sold and money raised to give to the poor? Nobody questioned that. You know? In other words, nobody knew he was stealing. And it seemed reasonable. Okay, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, why are we wasting this expensive perfume on his feet? Nobody knew. Which goes to show it's possible for us to live a life, right, where we're living in sin, we're yielding to sin, and others around us who may know us really well don't know it. Because when Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me, none of them said, Judas, is it going to be you? None of them said that. None of them thought that. And so when he left, they thought he was running an errand as the treasurer. They didn't think anything about it. Which goes to show, you know, we can live a dual life. The truth always comes out, but we can live a life that, you know, that's sometimes not obvious, you know, to people who know us.
I think it also shows that Judas at one point was trustworthy with the money.
Yeah.
Because right. For him to be put in charge of it, they would have thought, well, he will never ever do this.
Right.
But
temptation
just got nothing.
Right. Exactly. All right. So anyway, he's coming back, and this time he's not coming alone. He's bringing a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees. Okay, you have this big group of people coming. And it says they're bringing lanterns, torches, and weapons. And what does that mean? They're bringing lanterns, torches, and weapons. If we had a group of people surrounding this building here tonight, and they're holding lanterns, torches, and weapons, what would you think? Oh, come on in. Come on in. I mean, you have, you have our hospitality. I mean, come on. They're showing up for what? What are they prepared to do? A fight, exactly. Now, who are they going to fight? Who are they expecting to fight?
The apostles and disciples.
Right, yeah. And they knew Jesus wouldn't be alone, and they knew Jesus would have fans, people who would want to protect him. So they're showing up. I mean, you talk about, you know, I mean, you talk about bringing a water pistol to a gunfight. I mean, that's what these guys, they're going up against Jesus, okay? Well, anyway, that's what's happening, you know, and we can really spend time on this kiss. You know, why have you come, friend? A very moving scene there. But how did Jesus show his willingness to be arrested?
He went straight to them.
He went straight to them? Okay.
He didn't run away.
He told Peter to put his sword away.
Okay, he eventually, eventually did that as well. Okay.
It says he had a chance before.
Okay, yeah, right. When they're arresting him, and he's like, then that really is back in further on when he's in for the high priest when he brings that statement up. But what statement does he use at least three times to show his willingness to yield to this?
I am he.
Exactly, I am he. Because he uses that several times when they're asking. Because they needed Judas to do what? Not only get them to where Jesus was located, but what else did they need Judas to do for them?
Identify.
Exactly. Because it's dark, right? They don't know who's who. They want the right person. And so Judas uses this kiss to point out Jesus to these people coming to apprehend him. But they're asking. Jesus said he went forward, like he came forward to them and said, who are you looking for? They said, we're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. Well, you're looking at him. I'm he. And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. And he said to them, I'm he. They drew back and fell to the ground. Now that's amazing. What do you think that means? Officers from the chief priest and Pharisees were included in this. And then a detachment of troops.
They're like, if he has the confidence to tell, or to like to say that he's the guy they're looking for, like by himself, that there must be, he must have some power.
Yeah, that he has power at that moment. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Like they're scared of what he can do. If he's
exactly. Scared. That's it. They're scared. They know what he's capable of, I would think, is what that means. You know, they're coming. And now it's actually the moment where they're eyeball to eyeball with Jesus. And he says, you're looking at him, I'm the man. And they hit the ground. That's amazing to me. But what does that show about these guys? What does it show about them?
you know?
Probably a portion at least had some belief in his power, and perhaps, you know, maybe they were just kind of roped in and like, okay, he's totally going to break out once we take him along. We just got to play along. Again, speculation.
I'm with you. I hear you. I mean, I don't think it's stuff that they just heard about. I imagine these are guys who have seen Jesus in action these last 3 years, you know? And when they're going up against him, and for a split second, they realize that, you know? I don't know. It's just, that's profound to me that they fall to the ground. I mean, they did. But anyway, Jesus is like, okay, yeah, I'm the one. I'm he. And so he's willing to do this. And then like someone mentioned, Peter cut off the servant's ear. It says, Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. Verse 10. What do you think that's saying? I mean, he has the right ear, but what do you think that implies when John wrote this? That this, he's the only one that mentions this. That Peter cut off his right ear.
Peter was left-handed. Maybe.
That's a good point.
Or he missed. I guess right-handed.
What now?
I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't, yeah. Could be.
Maybe he wasn't really aiming for the ear. Yes.
Yeah, that's true too. I doubt he was. I don't know. I mean, apparently there's some movement here and got that right ear. But the point I was thinking of is the only person who would probably know that would be an eyewitness. You know, go ahead.
Luke also mentions right ear.
He does? Yes. Well, that blows that theory out of the water. Never mind. So I don't know what it means, the right ear. Because I don't think Luke was there. So, but yeah, I thought that was strange. The right ear is mentioned. But
it probably means it was an aim. It was attended to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't specifically aim for someone's
ear. Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now this is another scene that's puzzling. Because it doesn't say here, but what does Jesus do at this time?
Healed here.
Let me get this thing for you. Put that thing back on. What is it? The guy's ear is put back on. Wasn't you at that moment like, okay, boys, we got to go on home. This guy, we have no business messing with this guy. Right? I mean, you would think that, okay, yeah, you're the one. You're the man. But they hold their ground, and he tells Peter to put away that sword. Now, why is that, though? Put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?
Okay. Well, I was saying just
about that ear. Is that what now?
Oh, just on the subject of that right ear, in Luke, it doesn't mention who struck the high priest. So John, I think, is probably the one who specifically mentions
Malchus.
Simon Peter.
Oh, Simon
Peter. And the name Malchus, but...
Okay. Well, either way, I mean, you know, it's just amazing to me. You know, the fact that Jesus responded that way, it's just amazing.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
One thing I was going to add to that is, I think it just shows in some weird way, at least to me, how loose a cannon Peter is. Because, well, what I mean by that is, if you're cutting someone's right ear off, you got to come vertically somehow. You got to be just, you don't kill somebody like that. Like that's a flailing cut. If you've done any type of sword fighting or knife thing, yes, you would. If you were going to kill, this is not your motion. So to me, it just says he just off his. That's typical Peter. He just
warning shot
wanted to just wail. He was not out to kill anybody. He was just ready for a fight, which leads into your point, which you're getting ready to make. I think is. You don't need to be ready for a fight. Our fight is not physical.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, exactly. Jesus is about to put him in his place. But my word, I mean, what a response.
Right.
You know, these guys have weapons and all this, and they're outnumbered. Most likely. But what? Go ahead.
Well, it could have been you know, Peter wanted to prove, you know, Jesus' prediction wrong. So he's just like, you know, I'm just going to go down swinging, mm-hmm. and I get who I get.
Right.
And maybe it wasn't an intent to kill, but it was intent to harm.
Yeah,
it was definitely intent to harm.
Right. It also kind of reflects, if, I mean, for a little bit like that, Peter's complete faith in Jesus. So it's, you know, this is my king, and I'm going to fight for him. And even though he was completely surrounded by people with real equipment, it's,
mm-hmm.
he might have thought that, you know, Jesus had it handled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some guts right here. Tells him to put it away, and then he just...
Yeah. I mean, you cannot say Peter was a wimp or a coward at this point. He was ready to go down. Go ahead.
As we look at Peter, I'm thinking about the moment that we've built to in this moment.
Right.
And how he had to, you know, I know we keep saying this, but they still thought he was going to be an earthly king.
This is
even
true.
Up to this point.
Yeah.
Even after he's explained that he's going to go and die, they still don't get it, and they still think he's going to be the king. So for Peter, this is the moment where they take control of Jerusalem, and they rule from on high.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that he does this, not only does Jesus rebuke him, but it's almost like, I'm sorry for my friend here. He picks up his ear, heals him, and says, put your sword away. And for Peter,
that's cool.
I just can't imagine the confusion and,
right.
you know, everything he's believed in for the past two and a half, 3 years
right.
has just crumbled right in front of him
mm-hmm.
in the matter of, you know, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, and also, now the soldiers and high priest have a legitimate reason to go and arrest Peter. Peter still has a role to fulfill. So it's almost like Jesus is like, ignore him, I'm the focus, let me fix this, and we can go be on our way, ignore this guy. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, because it's the high priest's servant, so,
mm-hmm.
you know.
It's not really
good. That's kind of so important.
Right, that's a good point, too.
I think to build off of what he said,
mm-hmm.
This is the start of his complete loss of momentum and what really
mm-hmm.
drives him into, I think, denying Jesus
mm-hmm.
because he's built up this kind of zealotry and he's fighting spirit, and then Jesus tells him, no, you're not doing that,
right.
and he's completely at a loss. And so, of course, it would cause him to stumble,
mm-hmm.
I think,
yeah.
and make it much more easy to deny
right.
him.
Right, okay.
This is also coming off of Jesus telling Peter that he's going to deny him, so I feel like he's also reacting to that. He's like, I'm not going to deny
yeah,
him.
See,
just,
I'm, yeah, I meant what I said.
I agree. What led to him denying Jesus?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I think he's trying to make a statement here, no doubt. The wind was let out of his sail in a hurry because Jesus has put that thing away. All right, so Jesus says, I have to drink this cup. All right, so he knew Peter had to put that sword away because Jesus had to, he had to die. He knew he had to be crucified for sin. He understood that. So Peter's little sword, you know, was a symbol of interference with that. But what else was there? I mean, there is more reasons why Peter needed to put that sword away.
To claim Jesus' innocence? Like that he's not...
Okay, not a threat to... Okay, all right, yeah. Because that's what they're going to use, that he's a threat to the throne. But, I mean, he's going to be able to tell Pilate, my kingdom's not of this world. If it was, my people would fight. You know, so to once again show my kingdom is not of this world, put that sword away. It's not going to be a physical kingdom. What else, though, was involved in that? Put your sword away.
Yeah.
Say that again?
Talking about the angels.
Yeah, exactly. That he didn't need Peter's sword, right? Yeah, that the other accounts said that he could call...
There was also, I think, mentions in one of the other books of prophecy of not one of them I have lost, so to speak.
Hmm.
So if it had continued, lives would have been lost. Probably been resurrected, but lives would still have been lost.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Very good point. You know, all these are relevant factors, though. I mean, like the other accounts say that I could call 12 legions of angels, okay? We can obliterate. I don't need you to obliterate Jerusalem. But I'm not here to do that, okay? I'm here to be offered up. Now, he's not, of course, saying that you can't ever have personal effects. Nothing like that. That's not what he's getting at. That's a whole different situation. Here, he's talking about yielding his life. All right, so we're running out of time. So now they go. And Jesus is first taken to whose house? Well, probably one compound. But he sees who first?
The high priest.
Well, right. I mean, that's a true statement, but it's also false. You know, he saw the high priest.
Annas and then Caiaphas.
Right, yes. Annas and then Caiaphas. So you have Annas and then his son-in-law is Caiaphas, who is what? The high priest. Okay. So does anyone know how this was working at this time, the dynamic of the high priest?
Weren't they just kind of elected?
Elected? Well, they should have been. It was supposed to be that way by the Old Testament law, that the high priest was supposed to be appointed for life, you know, like the Supreme Court in our system. But the Roman Empire prevented that. Okay, they would appoint the high priest at will. So they shuffled these guys around. So that's why you have Annas, who's the high priest at one time. He was like for, I think, 7 years, if I'm not mistaken. He was the official high priest. But then he was demoted. And eventually his sons were placed in that position. And then his son-in-law, who came in later. And this is Caiaphas, okay? So, you have the official high priest of Caiaphas, but then you have Annas, his father-in-law, who is probably the one pulling all the strings, you know, behind the scenes, but legally, Caiaphas is the high priest, okay? Who was high priest that year, as it says in verse 13. Okay. Alright, so he's taken here to this compound, and they probably all stay in the same compound, different parts of it, where the high priest are. And Peter's in the courtyard of this compound. Okay? And he's going before, and this is the first of these public trials that Jesus has to experience that night. It's only six in total different encounters that he has to meet. But Peter is in the courtyard warming himself by the fire. Is what it says in Mark chapter 14. It's a cold night. He's there with the servants of the high priest and other people. And Jesus is inside. And he's getting it. Okay? In the course of Peter being outside, Jesus is going to be beaten. Okay? And most likely, Peter would have had some knowledge of this other thing. Alright. So, he's there, and I should have put this one down, because, well, it's asked here. I mean, how did Peter get into the high priest's house?
John, who knew someone.
Right, exactly. That most likely it was someone who knew John, the disciple known by the high priest, so he had access, and Peter was eventually escorted in by John. So with whom was Peter associated in the courtyard? Well, that would have been the servants, right? As it says in verse 54, the servants warmed himself, and he was with them and warmed himself at the fire. All right, and then he denies Jesus. So what reasons can you give for Peter's denial? Is that question there?
He's all alone.
Okay. Very good. He's by himself with these other people. I mean, but yeah, he's the only apostle there. And is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, John is inside somewhere. Uh-huh. I don't even know. He doesn't even know where John is at this point.
Okay.
We don't know how far John was able to go in before, you know, he was stonewalled from going any further. Yeah.
He was jumping off that point. He was probably scared. He didn't know where John was. He probably thought that he was getting the same fate that Jesus was getting. So he's like, I gotta play it cool, or else I'm gonna also be beaten.
Yeah.
And be put to death like Jesus.
Yes. And everything we talked about before with the whole arrest.
Yeah.
Denial.
Right. I mean, how are you gonna start a world empire like this?
And he might just be just trying to play it off right now. Like, you know, I got a plan. I just can't let them know that I'm, you know, associated with Jesus right now.
Right. I mean, he's, well, maybe that's another question. Because they all forsook him and fled. Go ahead.
But to say he cares enough to stay close.
Okay.
To be at arm's length, because he still wants to be safe, but he still wants to find out what's going on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He could easily just, ran home, or I guess I'll figure
this
out in the morning, hot out. I just did cut someone's ear off. I'm probably in big trouble. I mean, there's lots of reasons why he could have ran. So in some ways, to me, it says a lot that he at least tried to stay this close to the action, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, very good. That's what I was going to ask, is why is he even there? So that's good. He's wanting to stay close to see what happens. How much time do we have?
It's 5 minutes.
Only 5 minutes. Okay, good. All right. So he's there, and he's following at a distance, but he's there, as it says, warming himself by the fire. But here, let's just look at verse 66. As Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came, and when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You also were with Jesus of Nazareth." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you are saying." And he went out on the porch, and a rooster crowed. Yes.
Really quick, I just noticed something. In John, it actually, I don't think that was actually John who let Peter in. It just says another disciple. And since John liked to refer to himself as the disciple loved by Jesus the most, I don't know if that was John or not. It was someone he knew, but I just didn't need to draw.
You're fine. Okay. All right.
Anyway.
That's worth examining. So he's saying, "Look, I don't even know what you're talking about." That when I was with Jesus of Nazareth. So the question is, what reasons can you give for Peter's denial? He's all alone, as already mentioned, which is valid. I mean, he's by himself against these people, so to speak. What else could there be? Why would he not say, "Yeah, I'm with him"?
The danger of being identified as a follower.
Okay.
A danger to Rome and being arrested.
The threat of being, arrested and tortured himself. Go ahead.
I think, and this reminds me of a question, but a lot of times I think we are like, "Oh, Peter's just so real. Like, Peter's just so relatable, He has outbursts, and he acts before he thinks, and he just says whatever he wants." But at the same time, Peter's also really young in his faith at this point, so I think he's an example of being an immature Christian. Like, there's just so many examples. Like, he cuts off the ear. No, don't do that. Like, sometimes we're too bold or we're too brash. So I think in this, he might, like Kelly's saying, he wants to be at arm's length, almost like sometimes young Christians are like, "Oh, I want to follow God, but like, not that much. Like, let me see how my life plays out when I only listen to certain things." So I think he might just be immature and he might just misunderstand to some extent.
No doubt. I mean, the guy's in a tailspin right now. And I think a lot of impulse is happening now. I mean, how could he foresee this coming? I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. What language is that? And the rooster goes. The servant girl saw him again and began to say to those who stood by, "This is one of them," but he denied it again. And a little later, those who stood by said to Peter again, "Surely you are one of them, for you're a Galilean, and your speech shows it." Then he began to curse and swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak."
John's account mentions one of the people asking was a relative of the person Peter struck.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah, and you can get into discussions on four or three, denials, but it's just getting down to the grouping. But yeah, I mean, there was some real evidence coming at him